All right. It is Friday, September 27th, 2013. I'm with Gary Unks.
Jerry Unks.
And we are at Cafe Giade on East Franklin Street. And this audio interview is for the Southern Oral History Program. And so, mind if I begin with questions?
Go ahead.
Okay. So, my first question, I just want to know about you and where did you grow up and how did you come to Chapel Hill?
Okay, that's sort of a long, long question, but I grew up in the Midwest. I was born in a city called Peoria, Illinois, but after about 6 years, we moved to a smaller town outside Peoria, a little teeny tiny town of 1,500. And that's where I really grew up, leaving there when I was 18 to go to college, which was at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. I'm a Midwestern boy, born and bred, small town roots, that sort of stuff.
Okay. And how did you come to Carolina?
Okay, Carolina needed...
I just want to make sure it's catching it.
Yeah.
You can continue. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, in 1967, Carolina needed a professor in the area where I had been trained, and so I took the job. They offered me a job, and I took it.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed here for 46 years.
46 years. What kept you here then? That is a long time. So.
This always sounds corny when I say this, but what kept me here was the undergraduate student body. I really fell in love with the undergraduate student body. There was just something about these kids that was, to me, infectious.
Hi.
That's what kept me here.
All right. So the topic of education itself, can you talk more about how you became interested in that topic?
I always wanted to be a teacher. If we go all the way back to when I was in the eighth grade, I can pinpoint that I wanted to be a teacher. Now, I vacillated. I wasn't always wanting to be a teacher. I'd go off and, I'd like to be an engineer. Or I at one point wanted to be a funeral director. So, I mean, I went to law school, but I always would come back to, teaching high school social studies. And when I graduated from the University of Illinois with my bachelor's degree, I took a job at a really, really, really nice high school in suburban Chicago. And I taught there for 6 years, teaching high school social studies.
Okay.
Then I went back to the University of Illinois and I got a doctor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came to Carolina.
Okay, great. So when you were in the School of Education, what was kind of your relationship with faculty members? And I know it's hard to perceive, but how do you think they perceived you within the School of Education?
Well, of course, there's going to be a wide spectrum. I think that most people in the School of Education, people in the School of Education saw me as a nice person, a good person. This happens to be true, but I was a very good teacher. And I won 4 university teaching awards. And there were some members of the faculty, I think, were a little bit jealous of that. And if you were to ask me, I taught in the course of Carolina, I taught about 24,000 kids. But if you ask me, Jerry, how do you teach? I couldn't answer the question. It's like some sort of gift, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But there was always, from some people, a little bit of jealousy.
Absolutely, yeah. Sure.
The other thing was, maybe if not jealous, the feeling that I was a lightweight, that I was funny, and that sort of thing. But even though I gave the lowest grades in the School of Education, there were still people who thought, well, you know, he gives real easy grades.
Right. That's what I mean. So, he just throws A's away, yeah, like, to
right,
everyone.
Right. So, but that's, I think, generally speaking, I was like, now, if you want a group that really liked me, it was the secretaries. Now, I know that's not a good word anymore, the office assistants or whatever, but yeah. I never thought secretary was a bad name. But anyway, they had loved me.
Why do you think they in particular love you?
Oh, I don't know. One thing, I treated them as if they were equals or betters.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, then, I enjoyed being with them.
Right, right. Okay. All right. So I kind of wanted to figure out you yourself. I know you're in the School of Education, but Caroline, I think, compared to other schools, has just a lot of history of student activism and those sort of things. And you were here for a while, and I was wondering, what role did you, or if you did play a role in just campus activities or community activities?
All right, there are many little things there. Carolina had a reputation for activism, but not a lot. I mean, it's a matter of degree. Yes, we did have marches. Yes, we did have armbands around our sleeves. All of that sort of thing. The activities that are often associated with the 60s found their way here to Chapel Hill. But unlike many schools, we weren't shooting one another, and we weren't... It was activism with a precaution. Perhaps the most moving, active thing that I saw, emotionally moving, was the night after the Kent State murders. It was not noisy or anything. It started at the post office. And the kids, the students, just lined up and they marched all the way down Franklin Street, took a left at the Baptist Church, walked all the way down to Peabody Hall, took a left, went down to the old well. And there were so many of them walking with candles and quiet. There were so many of them walking that the group had arrived at the old well before the group had left Silent Sam and the post office to start. That was so moving, I remember crying. We also had a food worker strike. The university was accused by certain members of the food workers group of chiseling them on their wages, hiring them at this grade, but asking, in a forcing them to work at this grade. It's a very common practice, particularly with less aggressive, less assertive employees. And there was a march about it and all that sort of thing. But I've tried many times to explain what Chapel Hill was like. It was active, but not horribly active. There still were sororities, there still were fraternities.
Right.
And all that's doing what? Kent State, never heard of it. Give me a beer.
That's hilarious.
My involvement was minimal. Not that I feared anything, but it was minimal. The School of Education, this surprises some people, the School of Education was quite conservative. You would think that School of Education would be just on the cutting edge of liberality, but it was not.
For what reason would you say?
I think that conservative types went into educational administration. Same sort of type that would become ultimately the assistant principal or the principal,
right.
that rather rigid, these are the rules notions.
Right.
And I can remember, now there were some faculty members in the School of Education that were very, very assertive. I would have been in the slightly assertive group.
Okay.
I guess I would like to have been, and I guess we can change history by changing what it says in your tape, but I would like to have been far more aggressive than I was.
Sure. Okay. I wanted to kind of to transition to the articles that you have collected, the Gay Teen.
Okay.
And I wanted to talk about what really was your inspiration behind that and why you thought it was important to publish that.
Okay. All right. Now, first of all, the Gay Teen is not a very good book. I mean, that's my opinion. Routledge, which was the publisher, decided we could either put out a quick book or we could put out a really good book. Mm-hmm. And everybody went with the quick book. Now, the Gay Teen evolved from a journal that I was editing. I had been editing something called the High School Journal for about, well, when the Gay Teen came out, about 14 or 15 years, I had been editing this. Okay. I have to do a series of events now. First was a report widely surfacing all over the country that fully one-third of the suicide, one-third of boys who committed suicide were gay. Wow. One-third were gay.
Large population.
Yes. Now that really incensed me. I mean, that really seemed awful. But I didn't really do anything right then because I still hadn't got to the top of the tenure ladder. Mm-hmm. I had tenure, but I wasn't as far as I wanted to go. And so I didn't want to do anything that was going to upset anybody.
That's understandable.
But as soon as I got that top rung, I decided we ought to take the High School Journal and one issue of it should be devoted to gay kids. This was an outrage. So I had the guts to do it. Now, it sold like mad. It's hard to realize today, and particularly someone your own age, it's hard to realize how constricting things were. That even in a liberal, relatively liberal university, I didn't feel like I could go off on that subject until I had everything that I wanted.
In terms of tenure?
Yeah, but it's important that you realize I already had tenure, but it was the tenure track. Mm-hmm. Now, here's another story that might illustrate how strange things were at that time, how sort of sad they were. And this is you can find out when the Gay Teen was published. It was published the same semester as my dad was dying. Mm-hmm. And I can remember standing at his bedside. Now, he was notoriously a homophobe, and I had never come out. But I was standing by his bedside, and I sort of knew this would be the last time I would see him. I loved him, but I didn't like him. And I can remember standing at the bed and trying to get it out. Dad, I'm gay. And I didn't have the guts. Never did come out. The pressure was sufficient that, no, that's scary area. Don't want to go in there. How different things are today. I mean, we don't sit and talk for hours about how different things are today.
Right.
But, I mean, the idea of a magazine, the direction it's gone has just been amazing. Well, the Gay Teen magazine, the Gay Teen came out in the High School Journal, sold widely. Routledge said, we'd like to publish it. Well, let's publish it. Not very good book.
Right.
Okay, we'll publish that as a book. And so it was published as a book, and it sold a lot as a book. Mm-hmm. That's how it came to be.
Okay. So you mentioned about this kind of the atmosphere and the environment in the community around like what the LGBTQ community was, and through kind of the internship and like the history program that we're in, we're learning about the Carolina Gay Association, and I was wondering if you could talk about from your understanding how the organization formed, and based on the environment, how was it received?
All right. There were no, to my knowledge, wild demonstrations or anything like that. The gay kids were very few. Out.
Very out.
No, excuse me. There were very few of them out.
There are very few of them that were out. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were very clever in their campaigns and things like that. Like the wearing the blue jeans thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's really very, very clever.
Definitely.
Or another one was the blue jeans, and then the another one. I have trouble with remembering.
Oh, no.
Just give me time.
No, okay.
Another was they noticed that they looked at the precincts for voting for representation on the student body, and they noticed that some of these precincts had very few people voting, like something like maybe 8 or 9.
Wow.
I mean, you know how student body elections go. Even today, there aren't very many people.
Who really wants to vote.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
okay.
True.
Well, this very, very clever young man by the name of Mike Nelson.
Right.
All right. And he looked and, hey, wait a second. This one here's got 7. Mm-hmm. We can get 7 people. We'll get 8 people in there.
Right.
And ultimately, what they had is they had a big, strong, almost majority of the student body by just picking off these little things here and there.
Right.
They were very, very clever. Now, all of the things that we subsequently would hear about going to hell and all of this stuff that looks like absolute nonsense now, yeah, it was here, but again, most people paid little attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
The CGA, the Carolina Gay Association, was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
A key person, and he's still alive. I was at a meeting with him a few weeks ago. A key person in shepherding it through was Vice Chancellor Don Bolton, B-O-U-L-T-O-N. And what he did was, I mean, as Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs, he was in a good position to shepherd this little group along, protecting them at the same time, not championing them,
right,
which would have turned them off.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. All right. The CGA, some of its early meetings were in my house, but I wasn't, I mean, I supported it, but they didn't seem to need me, and I didn't seem to need them. Or, alternatively, I thought I was in a better position, sort of in the closet, than I would be out in with the masses.
Right.
I never, ever, in my classes, ever identified myself. And it wasn't out of fear or anything else. Mm-hmm. I thought it just made me more interesting.
Right. Right.
I mean, now it's no big deal.
Right.
Yet at the same time, I don't know that I would identify as gay even today.
Is that? I just want to understand. I want to understand your reasoning behind it too. Like, I respect it, but I'm just trying to understand as well. Like,
why I wouldn't come
out
today?
Why you wouldn't come out? Why you wouldn't identify as being gay?
I think it was that shame and fear that men my age, particularly the men, that men my age had in those days. And even then, those fears are still around. I mean, I live in a community that's primarily made up of upper middle class white people. Successful.
Right.
There is absolutely nothing around that setting that would suggest to me I'd be in trouble if it were known I was gay.
Mm.
But I don't advertise that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I understand.
I mean, us older gay men lived with and continue to live with a lot of guilt and anxiety and that sort of thing. And I don't think they'll ever get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, during your time at Carolina, and I'm trying to like especially focus on the 1970s, even though you did not identify as being gay, and perhaps your students or the faculty did not particularly know, within the community, from what I understand, there were certain locations where that community would be. Were you ever involved in
often,
that?
Often. One of the things was there was a bar in Chapel Hill. It was a sleazy place, dump, called the Tempo Room. T-E-M-P-O, Tempo. The Tempo Room. Now, it was a mixed bar. It had, if you looked at who made up its clientele, all right, on Monday nights and Tuesday nights, there'd be next to no gay people there. In fact, there'd be not very many people there. But Friday and Saturday nights, the place would be packed with gays and straights, but mostly gays.
Right.
It burned down. And it was succeeded by another gay bar on West Franklin Street, which for a variety of reasons, after a year or two, closed. And the gay bar moved out to where Southern Season used to be, out in Eastgate Shopping Center. Then it moved to Durham, and it never came back to Chapel Hill.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Now, there were a lot of different reasons, but it never came back to Chapel Hill. Chapel Hill has never had a gay bar since then. Now, maybe it's because they have so many openly free spirits, it doesn't really matter. But they've never had a gay bar.
Mm-hmm.
Disco and all that stuff came in, too, and that was more likely to be found in a place like Raleigh or Durham than it was in Chapel Hill.
Right, right.
Well, another thing were after the bar parties.
Bar parties?
After the bar.
After the bar.
Parties.
Okay, so what does that mean?
Okay, all right. The law in North Carolina was that at 12 o'clock, midnight, the beer had, and that's all you could have was beer. Beer had to be out of your hand and in that barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Well, it's 12 o'clock, and you've had three beers. You're feeling good. You got to get this beer. Yeah, everybody knew you got to get this beer out of your hand and like that. Well, let's go have a party at somebody's house.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the bar closes,
right.
we'll have a party.
I like the logic,
and
yeah.
So it was very common for virtually everybody to go from the bar to such and so's house,
right,
or such and so's apartment,
right,
or something like that.
Right. So that wasn't necessarily like the lesbian and gay community doing that. Was that a student or like a resident thing? I'm just trying to understand what group of people were doing this.
Virtually all gay men. The women were not generally part of it.
Okay.
I mean, you're familiar with that cleavage, which particularly used to obtain between the men and the women. The
right.
Women were there, they were unpersecuted, and that sort of thing. The men are over here.
Huh, that's interesting.
But yeah, after the bar parties were fun. I mean, it extended the drinking.
Right.
When the whole university, not the university, but when the whole state relaxed some of its laws, that changed the after the bar parties. If you didn't have to have the beer out of your hand until 2:30,
right,
stay at the bar.
Stay here, it's fine.
Right. But the after the bar parties were a big social event, mm-hmm. usually on Friday and Saturday nights. Mm-hmm. Now, they were not outrageous. You wouldn't find the men dressed up in drag or something like that. I mean, you were cool in it.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm also understanding, because you were around this community, mm-hmm. Were there any suspicions that you were gay just because of certain people that you were around or that sort of thing?
People might wonder, why is he at the temple room on right. Friday and Saturday night?
Right.
Yep. People might wonder, well, he's not married and he never dates. People might... Well, those would be the prominent things.
Okay, that's understandable.
And you got to remember, it was a big deal then to be gay.
Huge deal.
I mean, it's not like today.
Right.
You will never ever know what it was like. Thank God.
Right. Thankfully. So I guess this is more of a personal question. Like, you can decide like whether to answer or not. But when did you know that you were gay? And also, do you, especially at a younger age, like, how did you cope with that? And especially in the environment that you were in, saying it was so hard.
Okay, when did I know? I knew as early as age 8 that there was something different about the way I felt. I did not know anything about it. I didn't have words to put with it. But there was something different. I also didn't know that anybody else in the world had that same feeling.
Right.
That's a very common thing amongst
right.
men my age, was I'm the only one in the world. Horrible, lonely feeling. That feeling continued for years, and there was always the belief that we're going through a stage, we'll find the right girl, you know, we're going through a stage and that sort of stuff.
And as if you're going to like snap out of it almost.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh no, the psychiatrists were making plenty of money at that time. Curing gay
absolutely
people.
Absolutely. We were watching documentaries and saying how there were even shock therapies and all these horrible things. It's a million dollar industry probably.
Well, psychiatrists made a lot of money on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that I was about 27, 28, something like that, mm-hmm. when I sort of, not just sort of knew, I knew.
For sure,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
So you mentioned that you had first meetings with the Carolina Gay Association in your house.
Don't think of my house wasn't a hotbed of activism and all that sort of thing.
Right. Right.
I mean, if you want the hotbed of activism, it was the third floor of Granville, I think.
Third floor of Granville?
Yeah.
Really?
I think so, yeah.
Why so?
There's just a bunch of gay guys living there.
Okay. But I'm also trying to understand how, because you were, you did maybe notice, you did kind of maybe oversee a couple of meetings or that sort of thing, so I'm trying to understand. What was the voice of gay students there and how they felt, and did they feel safe on campus at all?
There were some, and still are occasionally, there's gay boys, gay men being beaten up. It still happens. It happens less likely, but it still happens. When you talk about feeling safe on campus, not terrified on campus, but at the same time, the campus is not safe for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember the CGA.
Right.
Interviewers, including yourself, this is good now, but often try to, they're trying like mad to create community where it didn't exist.
Okay. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, yeah. I mean, there were people who were, well, it wasn't like a big organized group like the civil rights movement or
right.
something like that. Right. It was just a group of guys who maybe happened to meet in a bar or something like that. Bars were very important parts of the community.
The community, okay.
And the gay movement was also well behind the black movement. The blacks were far ahead of the gays.
In what sense would you say?
In their stake of the pie, mm-hmm. slice of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
People were sympathetic, some of them were sympathetic with the blacks. They had no sympathy whatsoever with the gays.
Wow.
Because okay. gayness is something you could cure. Blackness, you can't cure that.
Right, right. Who other than just people, you know, what kind of I guess organizations or where did you feel the biggest opposition is what I'm trying to ask to this?
I honestly don't know what the biggest was. No, I can't.
Did you have... Not big... Okay, well, maybe not biggest, but... Any at all in terms of administration, religious, community...
Okay, well...
Businesses...
Oh, another clever one for businesses was... And this extended over the whole Triangle area.
Mm-hmm.
Was paying all of your bills with $2 bills.
Interesting.
And what that did was it... showed the community how much economic power we had.
Right.
And because, you know, he's suddenly getting... The $2 bill is relatively rare.
Right.
Okay. And we're getting tens of thousands of money in
right.
$2 bills.
That's brilliant.
These guys have money. And that is one thing that about the gay community, in contrast to other minorities, is the gay community... particularly the men, have a lot of money, and they spend it, and this is a stereotype, but they also tip really great.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, that gets them in the place.
Right, right.
I mean, the whole South Beach area in Miami
uh-huh.
is the result of really wealthy gay guys coming
right.
from all over the country
mm-hmm.
for spring break.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't think of a community in the sense of a tightly knit group that's organizing
in opposition
and that sort of thing. I don't.
No, okay. Anyway.
But that's just me. I mean,
you'll
find somebody else who, oh yes, we were there at the barricades.
Right.
Well, I don't recall any barricades.
Right. Okay. Cool. So you mentioned that there are only a few students that were out.
Yes, it was a small group that were out, and they tended to be the sort of nerdy students.
Uh-huh.
I can recall some gay guys whom I knew real well,
mm-hmm.
Who, oh God, in the fall, you know, you have those organization meetings.
Right,
you know,
right.
Shit, you don't want to go to that. The only reason that you go to the is maybe to find him. Maybe you only go to the first meeting.
Right.
And that's the one where, like chicken hawks, you sit there watching.
Right, watching people.
Watching.
Right.
Oh, look at him. Oh, look at that for guy.
God,
he ugly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay. All right. You never go back.
It's that one meeting.
That's one meeting.
Right.
You never go back.
Uh-huh.
And it often is because the group that's hell-bent into... organizing and we got to get going and we got to wear blue jeans. Well, no, we don't wear blue jeans, and we chalk the sidewalks and goes on and on and on. Yeah. Nobody pays any attention to them, and they never come back. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they're usually the nerds.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Can you explain the blue jean thing more and that in like?
Yeah, if I get it right, mm-hmm. it was on a certain day you advertise widely mm-hmm. that all gays will be wearing blue jeans. Well, that meant that the straight boys wandering around campus who typically would wear blue jeans all the time, if they wear their blue jeans, oh, he's a faggot.
Oh, wow.
But isn't that clever?
Really, really clever,
yeah.
Right.
So it deprived them of the freedom to wear their... It deprived straight boys from the freedom to dress like they wanted to.
Wow, that's brilliant. Really, really
in the
smart.
Same way as gay people have to conform with certain...
Right. So going on an individual level in terms of opposition... did you know, or do you think that the students knew on campus or off campus in the community who did not agree with the notion of being lesbian or gay? And based on that, did you see any, for example, boycott of businesses or?
No, I don't recall boycotts of businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Gays were always, were often looking for a place to have the bar.
Mm.
I mean, the bar is where you meet people.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so if this particular bar is friendly, you go there.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned, the temple room burning down.
Yeah.
Well, suddenly, like the next day, there's a need for a bar.
Right.
We got to have a bar.
Right.
And a guy by the name of Gary Wirt walked into this place down underneath where, I don't know what's underneath it now, but anyway, walked in there and he said, would you like to be a gay bar? You make a lot of money. And the guy, yeah. And they came.
And they're just like, yeah, we'll do it.
Yeah.
Right, right. As far as you know, what was the reason for the Tempo Room fire? Was there any malicious?
No.
Nothing at all? Nothing like that?
It's a crummy building.
Okay, that's why. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it wasn't burn the queers. No, not
okay.
at all.
With your background in education, I'm also interested to see, recently, I think maybe in the last decade, there have been a lot of anti-bullying curriculum within education. And was that the case during your time at UNC at all?
I wouldn't say that there were bullying by college students. Bullying remains a problem. It's something that really, really angers me. There's far more attention being given to it now. And related topics. Just this very week, I think it is, or maybe it's next week, there's something on Nova about the NFL. And,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, big-time sports are beginning to get a lot of attention.
Right.
Well, big-time sports spawn or come from mm-hmm. small-town sports.
Mm-hmm.
The PE class remains a nightmare for most gay men or gay boys. The coach is usually one of the most homophobic people in the school.
Mm-hmm.
I know that
from
bitter
experience.
Is
that based on your education coming in like to middle school and elementary school? Or can you elaborate
on that? As long
as
I remember, mm-hmm. PE was a horrible experience.
Mm-hmm.
There is more attention being paid to bullying. And I hope there gets to be far more.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You didn't find it on the college level, at least in Carolina. Mm-hmm. I mean, oh yes, you get a group of drunken fraternity boys in a car. and says, "Hey, faggot, you want this?" I mean, you know, just ridiculous stuff. But as a group, I don't think that, I think bullying is more confined to little boys and junior high.
Right.
Okay.
Now, I gave you Don Bolton, okay. Mm-hmm. Why are you going to see him? I want to see whether you... I'm testing you now.
You're testing me? Ask me what?
All right. What information are you going to get out of Don Bolton?
Don Bolton.
The Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs.
Me, personally? I want to know, similarly to you, because being a faculty and being in an administration is obviously different, but you're still in a different role than being a student on campus.
Right.
So, I would just want to know what inspired him to really, not like you said, champion the group, but to kind of assist them in a way.
Right.
Why did he do that?
And another thing you'll want to find out is what was it like at the time? He's in a magnificent position to give you, this is what it was like.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the community.
Everything, yeah.
Everything. Uh-huh. Okay. So I was curious, and the reason why I really brought up bullying is because there are instances in other universities where you have, especially further back into the civil rights movement, where African Americans didn't feel safe on campus. You have the instance of, I'll give you an example, like even at UNC, and I'm involved in the Campus Y, black students coming to the Campus Y and actually just sleeping there because they weren't safe in their residence halls, and I was trying to understand, this was during the basically early 1960s, when they were finally admitted into the school.
Right.
So that was the case with the Campus Y, and I was wondering if you knew of that happening at all with gay or lesbian students at UNC.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Because I'm just trying to understand also how safe they felt in the residence halls, especially right now with gender neutral housing being an issue at UNC.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I was doing some research, and I know you were here during the 80s and mm-hmm. during this really huge AIDS epidemic, and I'm trying to understand how that affected the CGA, how that affected the gay community in Chapel Hill.
Okay, well, I don't know the number of men who died of AIDS in Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Since AIDS was so inextricably tied to gay, even though they were two separate things, this is a disease and this is a social condition.
Right.
It was something that you didn't broadcast widely. But as I said, I only know of maybe three or four. Most of the men and boys, at least it seemed to me, in the Chapel Hill community mm-hmm. were sensible enough to take precautions.
Right, right.
I mean, that's... I am told, I don't know specifically, mm-hmm. but I'm told they've stopped being careful.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I'm told.
Okay. And just trying to understand also... you've done some research.
Oh, here's something that's always amused me, is what the name of the organization is. It started out as a CGA.
Right.
But now it's a long-ass string of...
It's gone through several transformations.
It goes every year.
Yeah.
Every year. In fact, I used to kid them when they come into my office sometimes. I say, well, what are we this year?
What's our name this year?
I mean, right. it just goes on. The gay, lesbian, bisexual... Just don't know anyway.
Right, right, right. That's a good point. Labeling is important, it seems like.
Yeah.
What you call certain people is important. So going back to the CGA,
mm-hmm.
if you could, and I know you were talking about the techniques that they use, but if you could say in general, what they were trying to do in terms of even being an organization.
Oh, well, now, first of all, what they wanted to do was become a recognized group. Mm-hmm. And that's where someone like Don Bolton would be very helpful. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing, was they wanted to be a recognized group. They wanted to exist.
And was that difficult at first?
Well, yeah. And to begin with, they're evil and bad, and they'll give you AIDS. And we don't want them around. Mm-hmm. So just being recognized was a big deal. Mm-hmm. Getting space in the union was a big deal.
Really?
Yeah. These are major things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what the early ones were up to.
Okay. Just being recognized as a student organization.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So how did it evolve then? Like, once you are recognized.
Well, what's the goal? Here again, they had an advocate in certain members of the faculty, mm-hmm. not me, but mm-hmm. they had an advocate in certain members of the faculty, mm-hmm. and they had certain administrators. Mm-hmm. When they were recognized, I think it surprised some of them that didn't really change the world. They were still hated.
Right. that's interesting, yeah. No matter what.
No, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you'd still... I've only been away from the student body for 2 years now. Mm-hmm. I've been retired for 2 years. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing how I've lost touch. I can't tell you what the big issues are today,
mm-hmm.
particularly post Supreme Court actions.
Right.
I mean, what is? I mean, I presume one of your or some of your colleagues mm-hmm. are out sniffing the ground to try to find out. Well, what is the impact of this on the Chapel Hill community?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, can you talk about also? Going back to the community and when you would meet in groups, was it in secret or is it something that others knew about and others were welcome to?
Others were welcome, mm-hmm. and particularly if they were good looking.
Right.
I mean, those are all elements of the,
right.
of the. It's an interesting subculture.
Right.
That's one of the things. Is beauty is an important thing.
Really interesting.
Well, you know that.
Yeah. Yeah. In life in general.
Yeah.
So.
But I mean, the new kid on the block, so to speak, mm-hmm. is welcome, particularly mm-hmm. if they got a good personality.
Mm-hmm.
Good looks, that
mm-hmm.
sort of stuff.
Right. This is more of a... This is just a question that I'm interested in, and I don't know if you would know it, but we've done kind of some research, and there's this concept of tea rooms, and I was just wondering how aware the faculty was in general about it, and what they did to... how they reacted to
okay.
it in general. I just find that very interesting.
There were two kinds of gays. Tea room queens and bar.
Mm-hmm.
The bar group wouldn't think of risking their reputation by being... the tea room queens mm-hmm. wouldn't dream of risking their reputation mm-hmm. by going into a bar.
Really?
Yeah. And the bar people were afraid... of going into a tea room. Okay, so it was two separate groups. With it, faculty knew where these spots were.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, these spots were where a lot of men mm-hmm. got sex.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What did they do did they do anything to stop it?
It depended upon the administrator in charge of the particular department. For example, the chairman of the or the head of the department, the business administration, he didn't like the fact that his building, which was the building where business administration was located, which is the Carroll Hall,
mm-hmm.
He didn't like that Carroll Hall was a hotbed of homosexuality.
Right.
So he had all of the locks.
To the men's bathroom,
yeah,
I'm guessing,
yeah.
Locked. Okay.
Locked. 5 o'clock, they'd get locked.
Wow.
Others didn't give a damn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just interested if the School of Education had... What was that?
School of Education, to my knowledge, had no spot.
A no spot. Okay.
Now, part of that is due to its location. I mean, it's located off
of
the fringes.
Definitely.
Whereas if you're at Murphy Hall...
Right.
Or Bingham...
Right.
You know,
more central campus locations very easy access to them.
Right.
Okay. So... I guess I'm trying to just understand the distinction between, like, tea room gays and bar gays. Was bar gays, like, more, I don't want to say sophisticated, but I'm just trying to understand.
Well, they thought
they
were.
They thought they were?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And were they... So, just a generalization, I feel like tea room gays would be more open about coming out because there's just a huge risk with that. Whereas...
I don't know much about them. Because I always thought that it was very risky, and
it is,
and
yeah.
I also the whole idea of, mm-hmm. of sex in a bathroom is repugnant to me.
Right. Okay. Cool. So I researched a couple other events that just happened at UNC, and are you aware of the there was a murder suicide kind of event in Cobb Dorm?
No.
That had to do along with, like, something with the LGBTQ community?
No,
I don't know.
About it.
Okay. That's okay. And you said you weren't open about being gay at UNC, but were there
Not
any
really.
Other...
I wouldn't put that down. I wouldn't say that I was open about it.
You weren't open about it?
No.
Even with the publishing of The Gay Teen and...
Well, again, that's
things.
One of those things where let them make up their own mind.
Right, but I'm not...
I mean, there are people who write books about poverty, and that doesn't mean they're poor.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you write a book about gay teens
doesn't mean
you're gay.
Yeah.
And I did use that a couple times.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Sorry, I lost my train of thought for a second. Oh, right. So, were there other faculty members that were open and being gay? And what were the consequences of that?
All right, I know of no bad consequences for any faculty member.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just know of none.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yes, there were. There were faculty members who were more open. In fact, quite open.
Okay. Going back to, I just want to go back to the state in general, North Carolina.
Yeah.
What kind of legislation and had been passed that would affect the LGBT community? And how, I guess now it's a little different with the North Carolina General Assembly, but how had it progressed?
How had what progressed?
How had the idea that LGBTQ rights for gay and lesbian people are human rights too.
I don't follow. I'm sorry.
I'm asking really, like, what kind of things did the state do in terms of legislation?
It was usually not legislation. It was pro something. It was legislation against.
Mm-hmm.
So the state. I don't think of the state as doing anything that would have been pro, making it better for gays.
Right.
But they'd have a lot of stuff that would be making, you know, it's illegal to do this, it's illegal to do that, and illegal to do that, this and that.
Where right.
They'd make it bad.
Right. And I understand that also, like, up until 1969, I'm not sure how further along that, when that law stopped, but it was illegal to actually be in, like, a sexual... relationship with two men or two women.
Oh, yeah.
That was illegal in every state except Illinois, from what I understand.
Yeah.
So that obviously affected North Carolina.
Well, it was just against the law.
Mm-hmm. To do that.
But as was noted, on to enforce a law like that requires a policeman in every bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that's likely to happen.
That's not going to happen. Okay. Cool. So going along that, I wanted to get your opinion on, like, the North Carolina General Assembly now, and especially in reference to gay rights. Like, what is your opinion on that?
Well, I mean, the General Assembly at the current time is off in an area that which is defies direction. No one, including me, knows what the result of all this is going to be. I'm willing to say that I think it's going to be very bad. I think that the school children of North Carolina are going to be the ultimate losers. To my knowledge, there isn't any gay-specific legislation that's being... But you can figure that people who want this, 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 are going to want that, too.
Right, right.
It's a very scary time for North Carolina. If you're trying to repeal... If you're trying to repeal the state... from, say, 1932 up to the present.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty awful thing.
Mm-hmm. A lot of changes have been made.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Just trying to make sure I have all these questions.
I'm having dinner tonight with the guy that came up with the blue jeans thing.
No way!
Yeah.
He still lives in the area.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. That's a very smart... Tell them that's a very smart idea that I think that. Okay. Just see. What would you say to... really your past self, in a way, like, what would you say to your past self, to yourself in the 1970s Chapel Hill community, just based on all that you learned now, and in terms of being gay or being involved in the gay rights movement, what would you say to yourself?
I'd say you probably did it right. It was not a heroic position that you took, but it certainly wasn't anti. That'd be about it.
Okay. Just a couple more questions, sorry. Along with that,
we gotta watch time.
Okay, yeah, just like 5-10 more minutes.
Okay.
What do you think the struggles are for gay men in North Carolina now compared to the 1970s?
Okay.
What has changed in terms of that?
Well, for one thing, they can be far more out.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that they're going to be. There's still plenty of churches and, groups of rednecks that make life not totally safe in that sense. I don't think that it's any... Well, it's freer today.
Freer. Sorry.
Yeah, it's freer today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, my last question now, because I know you have to go, but where where can we go from here in terms of gay rights, and what ideally, I guess this is a two-based question, where can we go, and where are we going to, what is the ideal situation?
Well, in my opinion, the ideal is total equality. Mm-hmm. Total. Where do we go? Well, we got to recognize that it's not that just winning those court cases, albeit incredibly important, aren't sufficient. We need more if we're going to get to equality.
Right.
I think the business community can become a very powerful ally. I was reading a J.C. Penney catalog. J.C. Penney is the vanilla ice cream of stores.
Right.
But I was reading this magazine and I came across a guy that I knew when he was a student here. In an ad, pictured with his boyfriend, pictured with their two little kids. Now, that's an enormous jump that they would have those sorts of pictures connected with their product that they're selling.
Right.
We need a lot more of that sort of stuff.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to say about Carolina Gay Association?
Get a
good name. Or like anything else in general that about your involvement in gay rights or anything like that?
I don't want to be seen as doing more than I did because I didn't do much.
Okay.
And that's real important.
Absolutely. Okay. Cool. Well.
All right. Now this is the one where I.